The mission of American Family Association is to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of American culture and give aid to the church here and abroad in its task of fulfilling the Great Commission. Further, AFA believes this ministry, as well as everything in the heavens and on the earth, belongs to God, and AFA's role is that of a trusted manager.
Thank you for standing with the American Family Association.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. This is Wednesday, August the 27th, 2025. And as always, we thank you for listening to American Family Radio. In studio with me is Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, sir.
Wesley Wildman.
Good morning.
And Fred Jackson.
Good morning, Tim.
And Fred, got some sad news to report to start the day, right?
Yeah, we do. It's a Catholic school in Minneapolis. A shooter there this morning. We're just starting to get details. The shooter is contained, police are saying, but there are also reports of multiple injuries at this school. As I say, it's a Catholic school. It's at the Annunciation Church. I believe it's in the south side of Minneapolis. Most of the major networks right now are doing live coverage from the scene. This happened about 8:30 this morning, they say, Minneapolis time. I guess at this Catholic school, they have a mass on Wednesday mornings about this time. And apparently someone, and that's about all we know, and neighbors are reporting hearing gunshots, multiple gunshots. What we're seeing right now is parents are beginning to show up, and their kids are starting to stream out. You see these kids in their school uniforms. And obviously for parents who have been able to get their kids, they are relieved. But, you know, there's got to be a whole lot of other parents that are being told your child is at least injured. And that's what's taking place right now. A lot of stuff unfolding. We'll try to keep you up to date as the morning goes along.
But the suspect is dead.
The term that's being used is contained.
Okay.
That's the official.
And some sources are, some news outlets are reporting that a source said that the shooter is dead, but that is not official. So he's contained is what
gotcha.
The official statement is. You know, this. I've obviously never been in a situation like this as a young person, but school is just starting. Where do you go from here after the, let's say all these kids, hopefully they, or the victims all survive, but do you call off the school year? I mean, how do you get back to normal after something like this? Every time you walk into that school, you're going to be reminded of the terror of that day.
I would imagine that they postpone the starting of school for a month, and they'll probably have to shorten their holidays or go through the summer of next year, try to do a lot of work at home. But I couldn't imagine going back within the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
At minimum.
And they'll probably make counseling available and so on and so forth.
So this just happened, what, an hour or so ago and a couple of hours ago?
What we're hearing is, as I say, on right. Wednesday mornings at this Catholic school, they have a mass service.
Right.
So that was at 8:30 this morning. That's when it's been reported that the shooting broke out.
The shooter is dead on self-inflicted gunshot wound is what MSNBC is reporting at the bottom of their screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll wait and see. But when you have a large gathering in one place, I'm going to speculate and probably no reason to do that, but my mind starts to think that this is somebody who knew that all these kids were going to be in one place. Maybe it was a fellow student who was angry or something. We'll find out more probably pretty quick.
The suspect has not been publicly identified. So we don't know anything about, we don't know the age or background or.
But you know, this could happen anywhere.
Yeah.
At any time. Really.
Yeah. We'll wait and, you know, like we've been saying over and over again, more information, but it would be good if schools had a police officer that was paid with a firearm. And hopefully they had that. Hopefully,
yeah, they may have.
May have, and that would be
security.
Yeah, because you need
security.
At these schools, you need that.
But even that, you know, would not necessarily prevent.
No, it wouldn't prevent it, but it could minimize
deter. Minimize. Yeah.
Some of the sources I've been reading just before coming into the studio, there have been multiple incidents in the last 24 hours of shootings. In fact, one at 2:30 this morning on the streets of Minneapolis. You know, it's interesting, the Democratic National Committee, the DNC, is holding its annual meeting in Minneapolis right now. And we've talked about the speeches coming out of there, the governor of Minneapolis, Tim Walz, all condemning President Trump for focusing on crime, on violent crime. And it's hard to you cannot deny that this is happening in Chicago, in Baltimore, all of these cities. Yet the big stories in the mainstream media is, how dare Trump talk about, and of course, Democrats are saying it's not as bad as Trump is saying.
Right.
You know, crime is under control, but here you have it in Minneapolis this morning. And, you know, one of the questions being asked right now, do they have security at this school? Mm-hmm. Is there somebody there? Because unfortunately, there
I'll bet you they do.
I would hope.
A large Catholic school like that, I would, you know.
So,
yeah. But like you said, we'll find out. But yeah, the irony is they're meeting in Minneapolis talking about how Trump is, you know, making violence more of a deal than it really is.
Yes.
And especially in these big cities. And here we have this happen this morning.
And we have, it's interesting, we have on our site this morning, AFN.net, the latest AP North poll, which says 81% of Americans agree with the president on this, that we are facing violence across the country, especially in big cities. 81%.
By the way, just FYI, the CNN and MSNBC are both reporting that the shooter is dead. So, anyway, for what that's worth. What was the statistic you were citing, Fred?
Well, this is an AP North poll. We have this story. It's an Associated Press story this morning on AFN.net. They took a poll. 81% of Americans agree with the president that we have a problem with violence in this country, especially in big cities. And yes, most of the big cities being talked about are Democrat controlled.
Well, it's gun violence, Fred. And, you know, guns are notorious for
moving about,
getting up, having a mind of their own and committing acts of carnage and violence that if we can get rid of said guns, would solve the problem.
Then violence would end.
Gun violence
would
end.
That's the implication of it.
Yeah.
You know, that is kind of what Fred's talking about. And again, this is on AFN.net, American Family News. This is pretty stunning. You don't usually, because 81%.
You mean the survey?
Yes, 81% see crime as a major problem in large cities. You're getting close to everyone being in agreement. That's rare, politically speaking,
right,
in terms of, you know, conservatives, liberals, people in the middle. You get 81% of Americans agreeing on anything. That's a real issue. And I'm surprised it is that high, but not surprised because it is an issue in these large cities.
This is going to be interesting to see if President Trump's use of the National Guard and federalizing the policing in the District of Columbia, which I agree with and we agree with because it's the capital and it's a federal city. It's the federal city. It's not a state. So that's a different situation. President Trump's use of the National Guard, I think, than, say, in Chicago or Boston or New York or somewhere like that. We could talk about, and we are going to talk about that with Abraham Hamilton, about the constitutionality of what is the authority that a president has to use the National Guard. But that aside, the question, the constitutionality aside, there's no question now that this is being effective.
Right. The model's there. and it's being proven. And he has the, at least for D.C., he has the constitutional authority to practice or try or do something different than what was being done. And apparently it's working. So,
okay, here's what my point is. It's going to be interesting to see if any Democrat mayor or governor in America sees the effectiveness of what Trump has done here in Washington, D.C., and seen violence go way down as a result. Haven't had a murder in, what, 13, 14 days or something
that
like
that? That is correct, yeah.
In Washington, D.C., which is unheard of. Will they see, will Democrat voters in these states and cities, these blue states and cities, demand law and order and say, look, we want to do like what Trump did in D.C. We want more policing, more of a police presence, maybe even the National Guard in Chicago, but it would have to be called out by the governor. But I doubt they would do that at all because they would be shown, they would be accused of agreeing with Trump's methods.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, and they would be admitting that they're not doing a good job. The city council, the prosecutors, the police. I feel bad for the police in these big cities. I'm guessing that they want to crack down on crime, but they turn these people over to the prosecutors, the district attorneys, and to the, you know, to have these people jailed. They're released right away. Some of these cops are probably picking up the same people time after time because they're out on cashless bail, and then they're let off with a slap on the wrist. That's going to be very frustrating for them, but for them to, they would have to admit that they're doing a bad job in their city, and that's why they need to change methods.
However, it's kind of odd. I don't know. Maybe that's not the right word. Okay, what I'm about to say sounds crazy, but I don't know how it's inexplicable to me that the citizens in these cities continue to vote for mayors and aldermen and city councilmen and prosecutors who are soft on crime. So it's kind of like you're going to denounce criminal activity in our area, somebody do something, and then when there's something that can be done, you say, no, I don't want that. I want to vote for somebody who's going to let them out of, who's going to be for cashless bail and let the criminals being
with rap sheets
would let them run the streets. So how does that make sense?
Well, you got to wonder then, if that's the case, how many people live in these areas that can vote, that it matters to them then, because you know what I mean? Like, I wonder if the people that are affected by the crime live outside the voting register.
The biggest black on black crime is a major statistic.
Well, I'm saying, right. Yeah, I'm saying the people that
in the inner cities.
Yeah, what I'm saying is, I think a lot of people that would that do work in the inner cities that would say there's a problem, they don't live there, even though they agree. So they can't vote to change
because they live outside the area. But why would asking a question that there's not a good answer to, and that is why do the people who live in these crime-infested cities keep voting for the same people who don't do anything about it?
I do have something to offer. I don't know whether this
you
want to
share your heart.
I want to share my heart.
Okay, share your heart, Ed.
I think that since the George Floyd incident in
Minneapolis
in 2020, a lot of folks in these big blue cities bought the lie that the young black men that are being arrested for committing crimes, that are being put in prison, in their minds, they're being told it's at a disproportionate rate. It's because of racism. The police hate black people, even though there are a lot of black police officers in inner city police departments. And so they buy the lie that why all this crime is happening. It's happening because of systemic racism and we don't have enough money. They buy that and then they vote accordingly.
Okay.
and they vote for the people who say, well, we got to defund the police.
Okay.
Or we need to be, we need to try to right the injustices that have been going on. So cashless bail, they're all for it. And then they realize human nature kicks in and the crime goes through the roof. And then you have even Democratic politicians who are fall victim to the crimes, and then they start to complain about it. You remember there was a state legislator in Minnesota who was carjacked.
Right.
And then she was like, where are the police? Okay. Reality dawns
on them. She was for defunding the police.
Yes. It's extraordinary. But I think they're buying the lie and voting accordingly, and then all of a sudden crime goes up everywhere, and now they're realizing perhaps the foolishness of their actions.
Just to update our audience on this shooting at this Minneapolis Catholic school, Fox News now reporting 15 to 20 injured. Wow. These are young kids. We're talking 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds that we're seeing that are coming out of the school.
Do they not have gun control in
BBC, by the way, is
saying three.
BBC is saying three dead.
Yes.
So.
Who's saying that?
That's the BBC. I'm looking at their news feed on this.
Okay. Probably not the time for sarcasm, so I'll pull that.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. Because people have died, so I apologize for saying that. But my point is, and on a serious note, that these cities and states that pass all these gun control laws are not acknowledging human nature. Mm-hmm. They're pretending like the guns are the problem,
and they're taking it away from
and not the people and the individuals who are using the guns.
Well, to your point, I heard Bishop Jackson this morning. He's hosting Jenna Ellis's show this week. He mentioned that in the short amount of time that Trump has had National Guard troops in D.C., they have confiscated 115 illegal guns.
Okay.
Yes.
So,
wouldn't the left be for that?
Well, that's actually what Bishop Jackson was saying. He said, why isn't the media or the Democratic Party applauding that? But the fact that there were 115 guns illegally in violation of the gun control laws in D.C. should make it clear that forbidding law-abiding citizens from having guns, owning them legally, is not stopping the criminals from having them. So they took 115 guns held illegally from people who have been arrested, and that proves that the criminals are getting guns and they are using them in crimes.
Well, again, the top story we're talking about happened a couple of hours ago, I guess, maybe even less, in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Somebody went in and shot a bunch of students at the at a Catholic school in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and some are dead, the news media is reporting.
At least one media outlet is reporting.
And the shooter himself or herself, I guess you could say, is dead.
Related to all of this, you know, we talked about the Democrats are meeting there in Minneapolis, but also, of course, what Trump has had to say about cities like Chicago, that's certainly in the news. But here's the other problem. The mainstream media, including the Associated Press, is only covering stories of complaints from Democrats against Trump. They are not telling the whole story. It was very interesting this morning on our newscast. From Chicago, we had Pastor Corey Brooks, and he's been on Fox a number of times. But listen to what he has to say. He's a black pastor there in Chicago. Listen to what he has to say about the need that Chicago has right now for the kinds of things that are going on under Trump's direction in Washington, D.C. Cut number four.
We need to invite President Trump in. We invite the National Guard in. You know, we've had 254 deaths in 233 days, 80% of those have been black boys. And for anyone in our community to say that things are getting better and that people are safe, that is an outright lie. We need to do any and everything we can to keep our citizens safe. One of the number one priorities of government is to make sure that the citizens of the American of America stay safe. And that should be the number one priority of the governor and the mayor, but it's not. because the only thing that they're really concerned when it comes to black lives that matter is black lives that matter that vote.
And to his point, Mayor Johnson of Chicago and the governor of Illinois, Pritzker, listen to what they have to say about Trump talking about coming in to try to help Chicago. Cut number two.
We are being targeted because of what and who we represent.
Mr. President, do not come to Chicago.
I'm willing to go to Chicago, which is a big trouble, but we have a governor that refuses to admit he has problems.
Yeah, so the politicians say, we can handle this. You have Pastor Corey Brooks say, we need it. Okay. Did you hear the statistic that he mentioned there? 254 dead, mostly
like
young
230 something days.
Mostly young black men.
80%, he said.
Yeah.
Yet the black community keeps voting for the Democrats.
Yeah.
On these issues who are opposed to cracking down on crime.
Well, and it's and
I'm talking about the black voters in the inner city. They're going to vote for the Democrat. This mayor and this governor, they're going to get the vast majority of votes from the African-American community.
Right.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that the murder numbers are bad enough.
Yeah.
That does not include carjackings or armed robberies. And then setting aside the actual crimes that are being committed, how do you figure, how do you tabulate the fact that most of the citizens in Chicago live in fear?
Yeah.
Every day. You know what? This goes on for years in these inner cities. I've read where some of the worst parts of like Atlanta or Memphis or Chicago, where when they go to bed at night, sometimes moms put their kids to sleep in the bathtub because of drive-by shootings. Now, that is hard to tabulate the numbers, but how in the world does the number you cited from the poll, Fred, 81% think that there's a problem. Yeah. I'm guessing the 19% that don't include the criminals who are committing the crimes and the politicians who refuse to admit that there's a problem.
One person who has not committed any crimes who was almost canceled was Uncle Herschel.
Yes.
And of Cracker Barrel fame. Yeah.
Yes.
Right? But we have good news to report. Fred, over to you.
Partially good news.
Yes.
Partially good news. Uncle Herschel has survived.
Yes. Yesterday afternoon, the CEO of Cracker Barrel decided maybe this wasn't such a great idea. So they're changing back, going back to the old branding of Cracker Barrel with Uncle Hersch sitting there. And
he has a breakfast on the menu, too.
I
don't know if that was going to be gone.
Yes.
I don't think it was. But he was the old man leaning against the Cracker Barrel, which is the signature of the restaurant chain.
Has been for years.
In his overalls, signifying, you know, a country feel, a rural feel to the restaurant. And that's going to stay.
That's going to stay.
But to Wesley's point, it is only a partial victory.
How's because, that?
Well, the rest of the changes are going forward, so the complete redesign of the inside of the restaurants, who knows what else.
Let me ask you this question, and far be it for me to play the devil's advocate here, and I'm not saying Uncle Herschel's the devil, or even this one. What's wrong with redecorating the inside of your store?
Would you a woke communist? Okay.
I'm cheering my heart in, and you're mocking me, and I don't ever mock you.
All right. Okay, so here's my take on it.
Yeah.
This was all being done to change the look of the logo and the inside of the restaurants to move the restaurant away from this old country feel and make it so that it in their minds – looks less white.
Which would include the LGBT rainbow rocking chairs will stay, Dad. I mean, so...
which they actually had.
Yeah, so there's way more than just...
There's rainbow rocking chairs?
This is different than painting the inside, okay?
Well, you know,
it's not a facelift.
Well, that's the reason I could I'm not able to teach my grandchildren there how to play checkers anymore because they're not red and black like they used to be. They're all rainbow colors.
Well, and by the way, that was E.W. Jackson's take on trying to make the restaurant look less white. You know, they changed the wording on the little game, the little peg game.
I don't want to talk about that. Yep. By the way, the checkers are still red and black, folks.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stern. Stand by for news and commentary next. Vacation Bible School may be old school, but it's still very popular among kids across the Fruited Plain. CBN News reports nearly 3 million kids attended VBS at Southern Baptist churches over the summer, some 70,000 making a personal decision to follow Christ. Vacation Bible School, a week-long affair hosted by churches featuring fun adventure themes for kids, along with arts and crafts, singing, and lots of recreation. Many churches turn snack time into an art form. You know, when I was a kid, I got to double dip. I went to my family's Baptist Church VBS, then I attended my grandparents' VBS at the Methodist Church. Now, the Methodist had a lot better snacks. Almost switched denominations as a second grader because of that. The surge in VBS attendance could be a sign that more young families are now returning to the traditions of our faith. And the best part, kids actually want to get up early to go to VBS. Public school, not so much. I'm Todd Stearns.
But he saves the poor from the sword of their mouth and from the hand of the strong. So the helpless has hope and injustice has shut its mouth.
American Family Radio.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Am I on? Is this thing on?
It's real. It's live.
Can you hear me in the back?
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me now?
Me in the back?
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. I'm Tim with Ed, Wesley, and Fred. We thank you for listening, as always, to AFR. Well, joining us right now is Abraham Hamilton III. He's the host of the Hamilton Corner each afternoon, 5 to 6 o'clock Central Time, right here on American Family Radio. And by profession, he is a lawyer, unfortunately.
And, well, it's pretty fortunate
for
us.
No, I'm sorry. It's fortunate for us, yeah, but no.
Nobody likes a lawyer until you need one.
I had to throw in a lawyer joke.
Yes.
But, anyway, he is a constitutional attorney. He studied, we need more of those, constitutional law in college. Good morning, Abe.
Good morning.
Oh, did I say anything that
offended
you there?
Well, I mean, it's making it harder to sit in my rainbow rocking chair.
Uncle Herschel survives.
Yeah, Uncle Herschel.
Yeah, he survived to live another day. Okay, so I want to ask you a question. Before we get to the question of the constitutionality of the president's authority with respect to the National Guard, I want you to get to that in a minute, which is the question we gave you, we told you we was going to talk about. I want to ask you something, Abe. We were talking about law and order, crime and punishment, a life in inner city, a big inner city America, and what President Trump is doing in Washington, D.C., employing the National Guard and federalizing basically law enforcement, because it is the federal city, and he can do that. But the results seem to be coming in that so far it's working to bring crime down, violent crime down in particular in Washington, D.C. We were talking about why voters in the inner cities continue to vote for Democrats who are soft on crime, and yet they are the victims of crime. And I ask you this because I know you've looked at it from two different perspectives. You've grew up in the inner city of New Orleans, Louisiana.
Grew up on the mean streets.
Yes.
Literally.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's where you grew up. So you experienced that as a child and as a youth, and yet you, and later in life you got into law enforcement as a district attorney, or is that what it was?
That's right.
Okay.
Yes.
So you prosecuted crime.
That's right.
Criminals. So I want to ask.
Felonies.
Okay. So I want to ask. You've seen it from both sides in terms of. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you want to call it liberal, conservative, left, right, whatever you want to call it. But so my first question to you is, why do you think, or is it a misnomer, that people who live in these big cities continue to vote for people who are soft on crime. Is that a go ahead?
Yeah, I think one of the major things, and you described it right. I grew up in a crime ridden inner city environment, and one of the things that contributed to me going into prosecution was I heard lots of conversations about, well, the system is corrupt, and you have this, you have that. So I said, well, why not be a part of the system and to see it from the inside, you know? But growing up, the simple fact is my hometown, New Orleans, Louisiana, has nothing but Democrat elected officials for over a century. So we never had an opportunity to vote for anybody other than Democrats who were soft on crime. Now, I know lots of people will say, well, they would never vote for a Republican. But I would say, using the Michael Jordan theorem, you miss every shot you don't take. Mm-hmm. How do you know? You know, and right. One thing that I experienced personally is when Governor Bobby Jindal ran for governor in Louisiana, in his first effort, he lost to Kathleen Blanco. And I had an opportunity to talk to him and his staff. And I just said, listen, you need to come to the hood. You need to come and share your ideas in the inner city. And when he did, surprisingly, he had a much larger percentage of support than he had previously. So I think one of the major problems is I think conventional I would say Republican strategies or whatever said, hey, you'll never get a chance. You'll never get any votes. You'll never get any headway in these urban areas. So you should just avoid them. And I think President Trump's campaign shows the error in that thinking, because he got a pretty significant push in places like New Jersey, you know, and in other places. So if there is no competing ideology, then the people in those cities have no option to vote for anything other than that. And I think that's a major unspoken contributing factor to this phenomenon.
But you don't have to be a Republican to be for law and order and be against soft on crime. Actions, do you? I mean,
I agree with that. However, in the modern Democrat Party, you have to oppose law and order in order to be supported by the Democrat Party.
Okay.
So I agree with you 100%. You don't have to be soft on crime.
Looking at it from a perspective of somebody who's never lived in the inner city, big inner city, mm-hmm. like I grew up in, you just scratch your head and you go, why do these people continue to vote
over and over and
over and over and over,
yeah.
to their own detriment? That's what it looks like.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. And like I said, the unspoken reality is there often is nobody with a countervailing position that is actually running for the office.
Well, and even if you had someone like that run for mayor, you still got to have the city council. Yep. You have to like have a clean sweep in one of these blue cities in order to get actual changes in policies, right? Because a mayor's not going to be able to make wholesale changes without like-minded members of the city council, right?
Yeah,
you're right.
And we experience that to a degree. But unfortunately, as my old basketball coach used to say, pain stimulates the brain. You know, New York City was a haven of murder and all kinds of things. And it was the pain that led to Rudy Giuliani's election.
Right.
Yeah.
Rudy Giuliani was elected. Go ahead, Tim.
No, well, he cleaned up the city of New York.
Cleaned up the city of New York, and the New Yorkers enjoyed it. But what did they do after Rudy Giuliani left office?
Yeah.
They rescinded some of the same policy he put into place that led to New York being cleaned up. It was the cry from the criminality, the pain from the criminality led to people electing Rudy Giuliani.
One other thing I want to ask you about related to this is there not, though, a prevailing suspicion of police in inner city America because maybe there are abuses that get maybe sometimes blown out of proportion or that really happen, and so the voters are suspicious of giving the police more control and authority. Do you understand my question?
Yeah, I do understand your question, and you do have an element of that in places like I said, my hometown, that has been rife for corruption generationally. Right now, as we're talking, New Orleans's mayor is being indicted. Right now, has been indicted under corruption charges, and so you do have that as a contributing factor. But you also have the reality, though, a lot of times in these places, and like where I grew up, people want the police there. They want help from police there. So you do have those competing narratives. But when things get to the place like you all have, like in Chicago and other places, they went from Lori Lightfoot to Brandon Johnson. You know, they didn't have a candidate who was hard on crime, that had a law and order disposition. And you see that happening over and over and over, because in these urban areas, in municipal politics, you have the Democrat Party that is entrenched, much to the exclusion, with no countervailing narrative ideologically.
So that makes you, that makes people like me going, well, then have at it. If you want to vote for this and live in this, that's the point.
That's one of the points I was making earlier, is that you're going to have a lot of people that live and work there, that work there but live elsewhere.
Oh, work, they work, otherwise, work in the city but live in the suburbs?
Yeah, because they otherwise would have voted, but they realize they're probably out. I'm just giving you a
They're outvoted.
They're outvoted, so then they just move, and then it's, you get no pushback.
Yeah. Okay, so now the question, the constitutional question we have is what? Phrase it for us, Fred, if you would.
Well, basically, President Trump sees the success of his plan to cut down on crime in Washington, D.C., but he's been talking a whole lot lately, Abe, about I'd like to take this plan and go to violent cities like Chicago and Baltimore and New York. And, of course, the politicians in those cities, the mayors and the governors, are saying, ain't no way that's going to happen, and we're just not going to allow it because, by the way, crime is dropping, they say, in all these cities. We're doing a great job here, despite the fact the numbers aren't showing that at all. I guess the question is this. Does the president have the constitutional right to send troops into these cities to deal with crime?
And the short answer to that is no. So Washington, D.C. is unique, as you guys know, in our constitutional Republican fabric. D.C. is a federal city. President Trump has a lawful authority to do things in D.C. that he doesn't have in other cities and other locales around the country. The Home Rule Act is the constitutional foundation following the U.S. Constitution, the notion of him as the executive in chief, commander in chief, as well as the congressional authority allowed to him as commander-in-chief to do that in D.C. However, Chicago and other cities are an entirely different phenomenon. The Posse Comitatus Act of 1878 limits the use of federal military personnel in domestic law enforcement. All right. So you cannot deploy the National Guard from the federal position to engage in domestic law enforcement. However, this is where there could be a challenge, concerns of the separation of powers, because you can deploy the National Guard if they are functioning in a supportive role for local law enforcement. That would presumably require the cooperation of local governors and municipal officials. However, as we saw recently in Los Angeles, as long as they are not actively engaged in the civil law enforcement function, then the National Guard could be deployed. So the question I would have is, if President Trump says he wants to send in the National Guard, the specific question will be, send them in to do what? What are they doing? If they're showing up as just a visible presence, are they showing up to support local law enforcement? Those things may be okay. But if you're deploying them in an effort to be civil law enforcers, that is where you could run afoul of the law. But
so even backing up local law enforcement, the federal government, the president can send them in even if the mayor and city council do not want them there?
That's what I was about to ask.
And that is where the question will, that is where the issue will come to the fore. It will depend, it will turn on specifically what they're doing. So if you have the president saying, we want to send in the federal, the National Guard to support local law enforcement, and you have the local law enforcement officials saying, nah, we don't want you, we don't need you, we don't need you to do that, then the question becomes, well, what are you sending them there to do?
Yeah.
What are you doing? Much of what was done in Los Angeles was nothing beyond simply being a visible presence, that their presence helped to quell some of the rioting and things of that nature. That's something that could possibly be done, but it would one of those things, you know, the devil's in the details. We would need to know specifically what the federal troops are going to do.
But even in Los Angeles, it was different because that was ICE doing their job, wasn't it? They weren't necessarily they weren't protecting local law enforcement, were they?
The National Guardsmen.
Well, no, you had ICE doing their jobs, and then you had a contingent of National Guardsmen responding to the rioting that was happening in Los Angeles.
Yeah, the constitutionality question aside, I just think it would be a bad idea all the way around. for President Trump to try to start sending federal, National Guardsmen to cities of America like
Chicago. I don't think he's going to do that either,
but he brings it up as a possibility.
And that's why,
Of course, he's the master of trolling, President Trump is. So he'll say something that's inflammatory just to watch the head spin off. Now, sometimes I enjoy that spectacle too.
Yes.
when the liberals' heads start spinning off heads, it's really fun to watch.
Yes, it is.
But at the same time, sometimes I wish, please just dial it back a little bit so that we don't get into where I'm going to have to tell you I agree with the liberals that you're wrong constitutionally. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And this is an issue, Tim. This is an issue that our founders debated. You know, this was a part of the concern expressed in the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia concerning standing armies. If we had the capacity to repel the global superpower at the time, Great Britain, what will keep us from having a national army to enslave our own citizens locally? So
go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just saying. And so the whole idea of having a national police force is something that our founders rejected out of hand immediately. And if you look at tyrannical regimes around the world, that's what they have. National police in Venezuela, national police in Mexico, national police in these other places.
Federalis.
And that is not something. Yeah, the federal. That is something that I would be among the first people to object to if you would dispatch our soldiers for domestic law enforcement.
The only way this would work constitutionally, it seems to me, would be if you had, let's say Chicago, Illinois, for example. If the mayor and the governor, one or the other, well, it would have to be the governor to call out the National Guard. The governor of the state of Illinois says Chicago is out of control with violent crime. We're going to crack down. So I, the governor of Illinois, am calling up 1,000 National Guardsmen from the state of Illinois to go and support the local police department. Would that kind of scenario be constitutional Abe, is that?
No, that would be constitutional.
Okay.
Would be constitutional.
Well, don't call, this is where, anyway, this is not going to happen. As you said, we're talking about something but President Trump brought it up as a possibility. Sure. And the Democrats are reacting to it as you would expect them to. And go ahead.
I was just going to toss in here. I'm appreciative of what President Trump has done in Washington, D.C. I'm happy for the people there that crime seems to have dropped dramatically. But what happens when he pulls them out? D.C. is going to go right back. At the heart of these problems are the policies and practices of the people in charge of these big cities. They're Democrats across the board. And as soon as these National Guard troops go, it's going to return to normal.
I think he's going to probably keep them through his term.
The whole time?
Maybe pull them out.
They may rotate them out.
Rotate them out. Or he may pull them out and see what happens subsequent to.
Well, in D.C., in order for him to keep them and rotate them, as you guys are describing, he would have to have congressional approval of that.
What's the limit then?
Yeah, it's 30 days. There's a 30-day provision allowed by the Home Rule Act. Any extension of that time period would have to be the product of a joint resolution.
Well, send them home for 24 hours and start voting. I'm messing with you.
You're going to give Trump ideas. He'll take advantage of them like that, for sure. Yep. All right, Abe, thanks so much. What's coming up what's coming up on your show this afternoon here?
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about Uncle Herschel. In the cracker barrel, the cracker deck box, and the brains of the barrel. Okay. And there's also a development. there's a development. President Trump's CDC has just greenlit a COVID vaccine injury study, which is to study those who've been vaccine injured, which I find very interesting because for the longest, President Trump touted, Operation Warp Speed and things of that nature. So to have his CDC to formalize vaccine injury study seems to be an about face on that issue. So that is very interesting. And that was one issue that I thought was a vulnerability from President Trump. But it seems to be there's at a minimum a tacit willingness to consider vaccine injury. So we'll talk about that a little bit.
Hold on, clarification. Are you saying that the study's complete or they're going to do the study?
no, they're going to do it, but within the CDC. So you've okay. had VAERS, and you sure. have others have done things outside of the CDC, but the CDC internally is going to produce its own spate in studying vaccine injury, specifically right. COVID vaccine injury.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Abe. Talk to you later.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Okay. That's Abraham Hamilton III joining us on the program. You're listening to Today's Issues. That's the name of the show on AFR. Tim, Ed, Wesley, and Fred. And I was watching Wesley across. He's about 5 feet away from me. Anytime you mention the two words together, COVID vaccine, there's a visceral reaction.
Or a mask.
There's a visceral reaction on the part of Wesley. He perks up.
Yeah.
And gets ready to go.
My hair stands up.
Yeah, your hair stands up on his arm.
Like spider sense.
Yes.
That's
yes.
it. That's the best way to describe it on radio.
Yeah. Spider sense. Spider-Man.
All right. Next story, Fred.
Well, just before we leave Trump in Washington, D.C., his transportation secretary announced this morning, Transportation Secretary Duffy, that as part of what they're doing there in D.C., the feds are going to take over Union Station from Amtrak. Union Station, I haven't been there for a long time, but it's a meeting place in Washington, restaurants and the whole thing. But now they're going to take that over from Amtrak. And he wants to spend $2 billion in D.C. Upgrading the whole city.
To what?
He wants it to be beautiful.
$2 billion?
Not safe.
$2 billion.
Well, it needs to be beautiful. I mean, it's our
right?
and kept yeah. clean and safe. It's our capital, for goodness sakes. Mm-hmm. I've been to the Union Station many, many times. I've never felt unsafe there, but I haven't been there in
it'd be clean
about
either.
3 years. So, yeah, but they do have nice restaurants there, shops. It's where Amtrak comes in. It's where the Metro, that's the subway system in Washington D.C. That's where they go to as well. So. A lot of these cities, too, are starting to have more and more homeless people. And that's a real problem that they have to contend with. And I'm not sure what all the answers are on that, but you can't let it start. I do know that.
Right.
If you let encampments start, you see I haven't been to Los Angeles in a while.
Or San Francisco.
You see what happens in these cities when they let the encampments start for homeless people, and it just grows.
Yep.
And grows, and it becomes an area where people don't want to go to. The surrounding businesses suffer. So you can't let it start. You can't let it start. I feel sorry for the homeless people because...
for the ones that... I don't feel sorry for the people that purposely put themselves there.
Oh, no, the ones who just don't want any responsibility.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I'm just saying... When you see people who are obviously mentally ill,
sure.
or they don't have,
or one bad thing after the other happens,
they had bad luck in life,
they're wanting to get out, but they don't have
any family to lean on. Just when you see, of course, I don't go and interview these folks, but
I know what you mean.
You just wonder, you feel sorry for them. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues, Fred. We got about 5 minutes. Left. Has Uncle Herschel, by the way, has he had any comment? or does he still?
We need AI for this one.
Okay.
Or not AI, but like a, what is it? Yeah, an AI commercial here.
Yeah,
with
for Uncle Herschel. Yeah. But the one of the stories we're talking about here is Cracker Barrel. This is what I'm saying is true. I'm not kidding around. Cracker Barrel did reverse course with an announcement that they're keeping the old man in the, does he have overalls? Anyway, the old man leaning up against the Cracker Barrel, which that's where they get their name from, which is on the sign of Cracker Barrel as you go down the interstate and see it in your hometown. They were going to remove him. He was going to be canceled. And
He was removed.
As was the barrel.
Yes.
The barrel.
Was gone from the Cracker Barrel logo. I wanted to mention,
but they're back. They're staying.
They are bringing them back.
Yeah.
Because they actually did change the logo. Were forced to crawfish on that. But I had mentioned before the break earlier about the little peg game
Cracker Barrel.
At Cracker Barrel. Now, obviously, folks, this is not a huge deal, but it goes to the kind of mindset that a lot of people don't like. So the original little peg game where you hop over pegs and you try to get it down to one PEG.
Before cell phones, they started that.
Yes. Now, yeah. So here's what was written on the little game. If you can leave only one PEG, you're a genius. Leave two and you're pretty smart. Leave three and you're just plain dumb. Leave four or more and you're just plain ignorant. You're just a plain ignoramus. Okay, so it was insulting. And I liked that. That reminded me of growing up in New England, where my dad would regularly insult me when I failed at something. So now they change, and still the PEG games remain, but now they have language like, if you leave three or more, don't be embarrassed, try again.
No, they don't.
Yes, they do. I'm looking right here at a Fox News story.
That isn't what it says.
It is.
Says what?
They have changed the words. If you leave three or more, instead of being a plain ignoramus, it says, don't be embarrassed, try again. I am opposed to that kind of encouragement on a game.
Yes.
You're not going to motivate everyone by giving everybody a trophy.
That's right.
All right? Yeah. So now I'm being serious about they changed the wording on the board game, the little PEG game, but I will say my horror at that change is tongue-in-cheek.
I had a reaction to that the other day at a baseball tournament.
To what?
Well, Wesley coaches youth baseball.
Yeah.
And I have Wesley's son Bennett plays youth baseball, 10-year, and yeah. I have four other grandsons who now play what's called travel baseball.
Yeah.
Familiar with this?
Oh, yeah.
It's like really competitive youth baseball. Yeah. Anyway, so they had a tournament the other day, and there was like seven or eight teams in the tournament. I think eight teams maybe nine, something like that. Anyway, so when they finish the pool, what they call pool play, the first two games,
yeah.
Then they separate them into brackets.
Winners and losers bracket.
Well, they don't call them that, that's what they're basically the console. I call it a consolation tournament.
Yeah.
Which is the last four teams.
Yeah.
Top four teams and the winners and the championship, and the other was in the consolation. That's what I call it.
Yeah.
But then they said, well, they're going to give medals. They're going to give
rings
to the winners of the consolation tournament.
And it looks the exact same as those one in the.
I said, what?
Come on.
I said, no, you don't give rings to the winners of a consolation.
Of a loser
you don't
bracket.
Give yeah. winners to lose. You don't give rings to losers.
You let the kids know they're losers. And they'll grow from it. They'll become
That's
real
right.
men. You know what I'm saying? We'll be back momentarily.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.